Well, so, President of the United States met with family and advisors over the weekend, well, over the holiday, I guess. And, you know, there was conversation about, you know, should he drop out of the race and stuff like that. And so he came out. They gave him his favorite ice cream, I'm sure. And he was ready to spit nails. He's defiant and everything else. So the video is now circulating. This is why the left hates Elon Musk and hates the internet and hates, because, you know, when you've got, when you have complete control of the media, like Pravda, then stuff like this can happen and you can just shove it down the memory hole and it's gone. No one will ever think about it again, ever hear about it again. If anyone mentions it, they disappear too. And that's how you do things. But right now, they're not there yet. So I won't play the video. I don't want to get in trouble. But we'll play the audio. So here's Big Joe, the big guy, just a few minutes ago, I guess, announcing that he's staying in the race. Here we go.
Well, guess what? They're trying to push me out of the race. No! Well, let me say this as clearly as I can. I'm staying in the race. Yeah! I'll beat Donald Trump. I will beat him again in 2020.
Catch it. I will beat him again in 2020. I would not be at all surprised if later on he said something about being a senator, running for the Senate, you know, whatever, because he's gone. I mean, he is simply gone. There's nobody home. And his wife, oh my goodness. I don't know, but there you go. That's what we're facing. And I just think there's going to be a lot of Democrats sitting around going, what on earth do we do now? I mean, Rich was explaining that Kamala has control of the war chest. Right, it has to go to her if he goes. So it's not like they can just go, let's get, you know, Michelle Obama or Whitmer or whoever, because that money can't go to them.
And what's weird is I'm not quite sure if it doesn't go to, if she doesn't step up, I'm not sure what happens to that money. It's kind of weird.
I don't know. All I know is the convention is coming up fast. And when I said at the beginning of this year, really late last year, that 2024 was going to be crazy, I really wasn't thinking crazy as in just completely mentally insane. But that's what we're looking at. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. We're behind you. I'm behind Joe Biden for the first time beating Donald Trump in 2020, because he didn't do it in 2020. That's the whole point. maybe that's what he's thinking. He knows he stole it anyway, so we're finally going to win it outright in 2020. It's just like, And the rest of the world's watching this. Believe you me, the rest of the world's watching this. And they're all going, wow. And how can they trust a nation like this in the future when our people are so dull that they will elect these people? How can you trust when AOC can be elected to Congress? How does that? Ilhan Omar, you know, she's not even American. Not really. I mean, if you can stand there and be proud that someone's saying her priorities aren't American priorities, not the Constitution, it's Somalia. Just like, okay, there we go. What can I tell you? Rich is looking at my new beautiful object in the back, and he's looking with disdain, as Rich often does, at things that Rich disdains many things that make me happy. And it's been a cross to bear in my life. It's been a sanctifying thing to have to, you know, have things that make me happy. I mean, I have a lumen glass right in front of me that you all can't see, you know, because, well, actually, for that reason, we had it back there, remember? And someone actually wrote in and said, I can't watch your program because all I can do is watch the lumen glass. And I'm like, okay, well, you could turn the video off. There's really not much to see unless I'm playing something. I certainly ain't much to look at. So, yeah. But no, that is without a doubt the most gloriously cool, and it does, the camera does not do it near justice. What, this one should show it better. That one shows it better. Yeah. It is brilliantly bright, especially in the dark. The patterns it can do, the intensity of color. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm truly, oh, and it's going with me. Yeah, it's going with me, in the RV. So I don't know where I could put it that it could be on the dividing line, but it's going to go with me in the RV one way or the other. So, it's quite light too. So I don't really have to worry about that part. So anyhow, welcome to the dividing line. So many wild things. I mean, I sent my family somebody did a video where they had one dog was Trump and one dog was Biden. And they're arguing about who has more endorsements from animals. And whoever did it, you know, if you're even semi-decent, I've not asked Josh to this because my son Josh is really good at impersonations. He really is. It seems Trump isn't that difficult to do. Because, I mean, it's people who don't have a really distinctive voice that's hard to... But he's so distinctive that a lot of people can do it. And there's just so much stuff out there right now. It's absolutely amazing. So, anyway, lots of stuff going on here. Oh. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, this is what we're going to be talking about, starting off with. I saw Joshua Charles, a convert to Romanism. We talked about it before. We responded to some of his stuff, and he's sort of a early church father abuser. You know, I read all of this is why I became Roman Catholic and blah, 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 blah. And again, it's when you come to the early church fathers, Rome tells you what to see and they see it. And, you know, right now, you know, I can understand that 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But with Francis just playing fast and loose with everything, it's hard for me because Joshua Charles is a smart guy. But man, when it comes to spiritual things, people can just be so benighted. I could understand why people would subject the early fathers to all the traditions of Rome and read them backwards and anachronistically and upside down and everything else under John Paul, maybe. But anybody with an honest bone in their body looks at Francis and just goes, we got a problem. And yet many of these folks, you know, they're like, well, it's just one man, you know, the church will be fine. And da, 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 da. And I just have, and it's just, it's the same thing I've mentioned before. When you listen to Roman Catholic converts, what do they talk about? Conversion to what? To Christ? Abandonment of sin? No, it's conversion to the church. Always, I've converted to the church, the church, the church, the church, the church. It's their central focus, and it can be a intellectualized church for many people, or for many people, it's the Marian church, where Jesus is a secondary character as far as their actual experience is concerned. There can be all sorts of different forms that it takes, but anyways, Joshua Charles. This says 21 hours ago. I don't know. You know how on Twitter the time thing just goes crazy. Have there been any Eucharistic miracles among Calvinists? Now, I know what they're talking about when they talk about Eucharistic miracles. If you were never a Roman Catholic, if you grew up with a background like mine, you just never hear about this stuff. You'd stay so far away from it that you couldn't even believe some of the things that Roman Catholics believe about Eucharistic miracles, Marian miracles, apparitions, visions of saints, and the volumes are many that could be written containing all of this stuff. Someone dropped me a link on Twitter about 2 days ago, asking if I had, seen about, what was it? It was just one of many, many. Oh, that's right. It was a vision of some saint, some visionary. There are tens of thousands of them, who had, the person had posted it had said, Martin Luther is in hell. And this was a vision, ostensibly, of Martin Luther in hell or something like that. And, I gave a brief response, and I'm like, every religion has its visionaries. Every religion, when you think of Islam, for example, most Sunni Muslims wouldn't be necessarily overly excited about that kind of thing, though eschatology, speculations about end times, huge. It might even be bigger than in Christianity. Books and everything else. But then you have the Sufis. And there's an entire, not branch, but spectrum of Muslim experience with Sufism that is very obviously, the reason it developed is because the philosophical, legal, strict forms of Islam that developed as orthodoxy don't really meet the needs of people who need to have a spiritual experience, in essence. And so you had the whirling dervishes and the development of Sufism, and though there's differences, sort of the charismatic bent amongst Muslims. And so you'll have visions and all sorts of stuff there. I've told the story, I don't know how many times I've told the story, about the story amongst the Mormons that I first heard on a visit in an apartment near Grand Canyon, back then college, now Grand Canyon University, 35th Avenue, somewhere around Bethany Home Road, maybe a little south, on an outreach visit from North Phoenix Baptist Church many, 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 many years ago. And since it said Mormon, they sent me out. I think Mike was with me, if I recall correctly. Wasn't you. You don't remember this one? But you've heard it. Okay. I think Mike was with me, if I recall. And this, we were having a conversation. I was presenting Bible verses, so on and so forth. And while I was sitting there, it was a two-story apartment. I'll go ahead and tell this because it's probably been 5 or 6 years since I did. Algo could call in and tell the rest of the story, but that's just Algo. And I had gotten the feeling while I was sitting there that there was someone on the stairway around the corner. You know how the stairwell go up and then there'll be a wall or something. And I don't know if it's because I saw movement and shadows or heard a sound or both. I don't remember. But I just had a feeling there was someone listening to the conversation. And I think it got to a point where I had presented some biblical testimony, the fact there's only one true God, and the people really weren't giving much of a response to it. And down comes a young lady. And when I say young lady, 14, maybe 12, 12 to 15. How's that for an age range? And she comes down the stairs and she says, I just want to say that I've been listening to this conversation. And I want to tell you that no matter what Bible verses you can throw at us, I know Mormonism is true. And she says, I know Mormonism is true because I've experienced it to be true. And she says, I was baptized to the dead. Now, I've thought years later, since I've encountered this story more than once now, this is clearly a faith story. I'm sure Mormons have youth retreats for their wards and stakes and stuff like that up in the retreat centers in Prescott and Flagstaff, just like we did. And so I imagine these are the stories that are told around the campfires. Okay? And so, but the way she put it, she didn't say, I knew a friend. She said she had experienced this. Okay. Well, here was the story, because like I said, I've heard it more than once from multiple people in multiple places, multiple states. But she said she was being baptized to the dead, and if you're familiar with baptism of the dead, especially back then, you'd be baptized for like 50 people in a single session, and you'd bring your names, and they would, you know, back in the olden days, they'd use cards, now they put it into a computer, You go down into the baptistry, which is built on the back of 12 oxen, and you've got the elder who's baptizing. You've got the recorder at the computer or desk, as it used to be, with the cards. And you would be baptized in the name of, and in fact, I've got a video. I didn't think about pulling this up, but I've got a video that I could show you where they've recorded this very thing happening. And so she said that she was baptized and they said that she was done. They had done all the baptisms. And when she had first gone down into the water, she had looked up and she saw a line of spirit beings at the top of the room opposite her. And every time she was baptized, one of the spirit beings would smile and disappear. And so she's watching this, and each time she's baptized, so she knows these are the people that I'm being baptized for. And I am, by my baptism, I'm giving them the freedom to leave the spirit prison and go to paradise. So, and there used to be, I've noticed it's not nearly as strong anymore, but there used to be this idea amongst Mormons that they have a role as saviors by doing their temple work. Well, they tell her she's done, and she realizes there's one spirit being left, and the spirit being has begun to cry. And so she's so upset, she says, a mistake's been made. We missed someone. And they check the cards. I would assume it would be cards back then. Maybe they update it now that they've got computers. They check the list, and lo and behold, there's someone they missed. They baptize for that person. The spirit being stops crying, smiles, and disappears. And she says to me, she says, I don't care what you show me from the Bible. I know what I saw, and I know it's true. And so Mormons are actually encouraged. Temple Mormons are encouraged to have encounters in this way, with supernatural in that way. So what do you do with something like that? What do you do with someone who says, I saw it. I had a vision, you know? When a Muslim, if you talk to a Muslim, they had a vision that confirms their belief in Muhammad and the Quran. Well, most of us would do what I did with the young Mormon girl, and I took her to scripture and said, well, you need to test what you say you saw by what Jesus said is the very speech of God, because he's the one that predicted his own death, burial, and resurrection, rose from the dead. You haven't, and so you should follow the standards that he gives, not anything that you've experienced. And that's what we would do with anybody from any perspective, right? Well, so when Joshua Charles, get back to it now, when Joshua Charles says, have there been any Eucharistic miracles among Calvinists? I know what he's talking about when he talks about Eucharistic miracles. Especially starting at the turn of the millennium, stories began circulating of these Eucharistic miracles. And so I responded. And here's, and I'd ask you to think, if you're Reformed, if you're a Calvinist like I am, and a Roman Catholic said, well, how come you all don't have Eucharistic miracles? How would you respond? What would your response be? Well, you get to compare that with a tweet that I wrote back. Here's what I said. If you mean pagan stuff like blood or tears or hosts being set up in the middle of a beehive and being worshipped by the bees, no. If you mean Christian miracles, well, every time I look down the line to my fellow believers coming forward to partake of the bread and the wine, saying to the entire world, he is my only hope, being reminded of the tremendous cost of their redemption, and then I see them again a month later, a year later, 10 years later, persevering in the faith, yes, miracles, real miracles, miracles consistent with apostolic teaching all the time. So, what am I saying? It doesn't seem like any of the Roman Catholics who read that had the ears to hear what I was saying. I mean, the responses have been amazing. It really doesn't seem like anybody had the ears to hear. Maybe they don't know that the miracle stories that they are regaled with regularly about bleeding hosts, weeping statues, and the like. Maybe they don't know that there are parallels to that kind of stuff in religions all over the world. Maybe just not aware of it. Maybe they think it's absolutely unique to Roman Catholicism. We're the only people with this. Maybe they've never met a Mormon. Maybe they've never met a Muslim. Maybe they've never met, I'm not sure how you could not meet a charismatic who will have all their miracle stories too. I don't know, but maybe they just don't know. My point was that from a biblical perspective, there are such things as Eucharistic miracles. But if you define those terms biblically, what's the Eucharist? It's the Lord's Supper. What's the miracle? The miracle is that every time that supper is celebrated, and I'm not talking about a priest who claims to have sacramental powers and transubstantiation and all the rest of that stuff. I'm talking about an apostolic understanding of what the Lord's Supper is. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, okay? By the way, your truck was right. National Weather Service just said we hit 118 today, which is the new record for the day. Still 4 degrees below the max, so anyway. 11 degrees above normal. So some people are like, that's only 11 degrees above the normal. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. 107 would be the normal. So anyway, that just popped up. When you know, we're talking about the fact that we have people from all sorts of different backgrounds on the other side of the earth, speaking languages that did not exist in the days of Christ, who are gathering together and are in obedience to Christ, testifying of his death until he comes by partaking of the supper, the bread and the wine, in obedience to the command of Christ. So, I consider that miraculous. And what I was meaning about seeing them the next week, month, year, decade, is seeing the same people, seeing the faithfulness, the Spirit of God in causing these people to persevere for years and years and years as they testify in the supper of their faith in Jesus Christ. And I consider that to be a significantly more important verifying miracle than all these stories that float around in all sorts of different religions, including Roman Catholicism. So all they could hear was, didn't realize anything involving blood, tears, or bees was pagan. And obviously what I was saying is the pagans have parallel stories. There needs to be something that's specifically Christian. And they didn't get it. But he did challenge me, and of course finding this stuff is so frustrating. Finding this stuff is hard to do again, and I'm sure it's still in my... Yeah, it's funny, though. A guy named Jake Catalano posted three images, and it says, like the pagans, the bees were converted centuries ago. Prots exist in a perpetual state of imposter syndrome-fueled resentment. And it's a graphic that someone posted of images of Jesus, and the bees would not put the honeycomb over the image of Jesus. So people were putting images of Jesus in beehives. And see, they won't build it over the image because they were converted. And I'm like, so you're proving what I was saying. Yeah, okay. So I guess what I'm going to have to do here is... because Twitter doesn't want to show me anything here, is go ahead and pull this out of my... yep, there it is. Come on. There it is. Okay. Notepad. Pull it out of the clipboard there. I told this story during the debate with Bob Sengenis 25 years ago, somewhere around there, on the Mass. It's taken from Philip Schaff. It's a short little story. He gives a number of them, and you could multiply these over and over and over again. Another case related by Etienne of Bourbon is of a farmer who, wanting to be rich, followed the advice of a friend and placed the host in one of his beehives. So, again, back up here for people who are going, what are you talking about? In the early church, over time, you have the development of the concept of a priesthood. It's not apostolic. It's certainly not New Testament. What happened was they mistakenly differentiated between elder, a presbyteros, and an episkopos, a bishop. They divided those into two different offices. And then the presbyteros became a priest. They're not priests. But that's how it happened over time. And then once you've got priests, then they have this special role and sacramental authority. But even in the early church, there was no reservation of the host. What does that mean? Well, if you've been to Roman Catholic Church, you see people when they come in, they bow, they genuflect. They're doing that out of respect for the consecrated host that's kept in the monstrance, pyx, ciborium, tabernacle, different terms, different functions. But there are consecrated hosts that are kept in the church as the physical presence of Jesus in the church. And so in many Roman Catholic countries, you'll see these carried around in processions and people bow down because that's God. God is being carried by. And that developed, that concept is not apostolic, and it's not in the early church. In the early church, they would take hosts from the supper, take the bread and the wine from the supper, and they would, for example, take that to people who couldn't come to the meeting because they were sick, something along those lines. But they would not reserve them for veneration and worship. They weren't put in something special and carried through the streets and all the rest of that kind of stuff. That required the development of the idea of transubstantiation. That's one of the reasons why the early church's view of real presence, that Christ was truly with his people, is not the same thing as transubstantiation. If it was transubstantiation, then they would have reserved these things and they would have carried them around, done all the rest of this stuff. That develops about 1000 AD, that time period. Again, remember, everything doesn't happen all at once. You don't have the internet. You don't have fax machines. You know, you can get developments in one area that's way ahead or behind another area, stuff like that. So, these hosts would be, once transubstantiation became the popular understanding, then all these stories started developing. And the host became magical. It had magical powers because it's God. And these people are barely they're barely quote unquote Christian at all. So they've got a lot of paganism in them. So that's the background of this. So the farmer who wanted to be rich followed the advice of a friend and placed the host in one of his beehives. The bees, with great reverence, made a miniature church containing an altar on which they placed the sacred morsel. All the bees in the neighborhood were attracted and sang beautiful melodies. Yeah, Rich just gave me a look like I'm... Yeah, okay. The rustic went out expecting to find the hives overflowing with honey, but to his amazement found them all empty except the one in which the host had been deposited. The bees attacked him fiercely. He repaired to the priest who, after consulting with the bishop, went in procession to the hive and found the miniature church with the altar and carried it back to the village church while the bees, singing songs, flew away. Okay? So, I told this story in the debate on the mass, and that's what I was referring to in my tweet. This kind of miracle story, again, is found in all the religions of man. You'll find them in the East, in Hinduism, associated with all the... I mean, just think of all the temples and idols of all the different sects and subsects of Hinduism and Buddhism and all this type of stuff. It's just all over the place. And they all have volumes and volumes of stories of nature miracles and, you know, this image of Shiva did this when that happened. It's just, it's everywhere. You could not possibly read all of them in your entire life. They're everywhere. What they don't have is what I was talking about. What they don't have are changed lives. What they don't have is the unity that is brought about by a common commitment to a gospel that points you away from what you do to what someone else has done. That's what they don't have. That's what I was talking about. None of them heard that. None of them, there was not a single person I saw in the comments that got any of that, that had any earthly idea what I was even talking about at all. Which is sad, because a number of them are converts, but that should tell you a little something about that. So, in the midst of all of that stuff, I encountered a argument that you may run into. So hopefully, if you've just sort of been listening along, maybe you can tune in a little bit more here. I ran into this same argument in the almost exact same form from someone else. I think it was somebody else. Who knows on Twitter anymore? Who knows? He may be the same person with two different accounts and everything else. But I remember when we first started going out to Mesa, this started happening with some level of regularity, so you started getting used to it. But you know, the first time it happened, it throws you for a loop. You have a lengthy conversation with somebody. You give them the best you've got. You point them to the scriptures. And before they walk off, they go, you know, I think you need to know that my testimony of Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon has been strengthened by everything you said to me. Now, it almost always was in a situation where the other person had not actually been able to respond to anything you said. They couldn't respond to the arguments. They had not even heard these arguments before. They just didn't know. And so this is how they would do that. And you know, the first time you have someone say that, you're like, how do I respond to that? What? Until you discover this is a defense mechanism. In reality, you've really challenged them. They're really shaken. And this is actually for them. It's not for you. They are trying to find a way to go, everything's still okay. They're rattled. And this is what someone who's rattled does. So a couple days ago, a Roman Catholic in Twitter pulled the same thing. And that's what makes it interesting is he mentioned Jeff Durbin as well a couple days ago, and here it is again. So here's what was posted by a guy named Frank. Dr. White, I would like to thank you and Jeff Durbin for being two of the biggest influences in helping me become Catholic. God must have predestined to use you guys to convert me and thousands back to Catholicism. Thanks be to God. So notice, he's a revert. He's not a convert, he's a revert. At least that's what he seemingly is what he's saying. And so my I wrote back to him, and I think I was writing this just before the show started. 2:50 p.m. So that would have been, you know, about 10 minutes before the show started. I said, you know, when the first LDS missionary used the "You've increased my faith" in the Book of Mormon ploy with me in my early 20s, it really bothered me. Until I discovered this is a ploy used by every religion out there. Mormons, JWs, Muslims, you name it. And you just tried the same thing. So it no longer bothers me since I know it is absurd on its face. And when I challenge anyone who says it, they find a new Twitter account to use for a while. It is particularly sad to see people in the days of Francis so desperate for something that they would try this. I hope someday you find true and lasting peace in believing the truth rather than such a shallow falsehood you have to pull this kind of stunt. It happens a lot. So be aware that when you get that kind of thing, you've probably actually presented some arguments that they've never thought of before. And this is how you bluster your way out of that type of a situation is in that context. And there I find the quote that I was just looking for all that time. That now I realize why. The Reformed to Rome guy, the apostate to Rome, had said, I see, well, can you point to me an ancient pagan that set up the substantial presence of the body of Christ for bees to worship that set the precedent for your comment? Well, I didn't say that any of that stuff. I was talking about a specific example, which I did then provide that quotation to. But then, instead of hearing any of that stuff, here's another Roman Catholic. Apparently, Jesus Christ bleeding, crying when being scourged, sweats of blood at Mount of Olives were all pagan. I obviously said nothing even slightly relevant to that, but again, if you don't want to deal with the issues, you don't have to. Something else happened today. I mentioned last week or the week before last. Vigano is how some people say that it's supposed to be pronounced. Anyways, former archbishop, he had been the Vatican representative to the United States for a number of years. This is not someone who is just your local parish priest. This is a guy who was in the upper echelons of the Roman Catholic Church. And as a person in the upper echelons, he really started seeing things that convinced him that Bergoglio, Pope Francis, he won't call him Pope Francis. Remember, I read everything that he said to you, if you listened to the program a little while ago, and he was summoned to Rome to answer for the crime of schism, which obviously he had committed. I mean, that's pretty obvious when he denies that Francis is a pope and accuses him of heresy. Well, he and I agree, but I'm not pretending to be a Roman Catholic, so what are you going to do? And so he has been excommunicated. He has been removed from the Roman Catholic Church. Now, I just want to point out, if this was the year 1600 and we lived in a Roman Catholic country, there would have been further ramifications of this action. In other words, he would have been arrested and executed. Oh, but that was just the state doing it. Yeah, but if the state didn't do it, then they would be excommunicated, and eventually you'd find someone in the state who was going to do it because they didn't want to end up being burned themselves. And so everybody knew it was the church doing it, but now in the modern days, it's, oh, no, the church never did. You know, everybody knew exactly what was going on. So I don't think Vigano has too much to worry about on that end of things. But I wrote this on Twitter as well. I said, okay, just ponder this for a bit, my dear Catholic friends. Heretics galore run around Catholic university campuses, denying every cardinal doctrine Rome has dogmatized. And it's true, by the way. I mean, you see these historically Roman Catholic universities and the abject collapse of Roman Catholic schools in regards to Roman Catholic theology. Oh, there are a few. There are a few that have tried to sort of hold on. But the vast majority have just given in, just collapsed. And, you know, you go to Boston College and take a theology class there, you're gonna hear every kind of left-wing wackadoodle theology known to man, just like you can in every left-wing Protestant seminary. So I said, denying every cardinal doctrine Rome is dogmatized daily, in print even. For that matter, the Pope himself favors many of these leftists and promotes them within the Vatican. And he does. I mean, Tucho Fernandez, look at the Dicastery of the Faith, the former Inquisition. The Inquisition is now good at getting rid of people who believed what the Inquisition used to believe. Okay, there's been a complete reversal. There is. If you can't at least sit back and go, well, yeah, the Jesuits of 1600 would have burned every single Jesuit of 2024. Probably without due process. And the Roman Church, the Roman Inquisition of 1600, could not even imagine the Roman Inquisition of 2024. Couldn't even begin to imagine the possibility. So the Pope does favor many of these leftists. He puts them on papal commissions, all the rest of this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, Vigano is guilty of schism. That is obvious. But he is guilty for speaking the truth about Francis. And that is why he's been excommunicated. It's true. And then I want to try to, you know, bring this to the reason why I'm sharing it. And given the authority structure of Rome, a structure never even dreamed of by the apostles, there is nothing to be done about it. Just hold your nose, smile, and repeat the mantra, oh, well, yes, this stinks, but hey, this must be proof that the church is right. And I've seen that over and over again for years, but especially just recently. So many people on Twitter, you point these things out, you point the changes that Francis is making, you demonstrate that Francis is not consistent with even the Roman Catholic concept of tradition. And what do you hear? Well, that's why I'm a Catholic. It's like, really? Okay. You're a Catholic because you have what you seemingly admit is an apostate leader. And your faith that the church is just going to continue, and that apostate leader is not going to teach the church anything that's heretical. Even though history shows that is absolutely absurd. Honorius did it and was anathematized by every one of his successors for 400 years. Francis is doing it. Francis is putting people in place who are going to be there long after he's gone. I mean, think about, you know, why are the Democrats so wildly focused on winning in 2024? Because they know there are at least two, possibly three Supreme Court justices that aren't going to make it to 2028. And they want those seats. Why? because that's how they can have an impact far, 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 far beyond this time frame. And so when Francis is putting people on in positions where they are going to impact the teaching within the Roman Church for decades, don't tell me he's not teaching. Don't tell me that's not an act of teaching. Because that's what they've done. That's what they've done with papal infallibility. Papal infallibility is such a joke. It is such a joke. It literally, I mean, it honestly comes down to, in its final analysis, that the Pope is always right unless he's wrong. That's all it is. And you can never know. You can never know. You can't know, as a Roman Catholic today, what fiducia supplicans really means. And you won't know while Francis is alive. And you can't really know what it means. And you can't really know what any tradition is or any teaching is, because it can change. And when it changes, that means that's what it always was, even though you understood it differently, which means you will be wrong, but you have no way of knowing you were wrong. Isn't that fun? What a mess. What a mess. And so that's what I'm saying here, is I'm saying, and given the authority structure of Rome, a structure never even dreamed of by the apostles, there is nothing to be done about it. Just hold your nose, smile, and repeat the mantra. And that's what they're doing. And I said, man, don't you get tired of it? And I'm not necessarily looking for responses from the Roman Catholics who like to type a lot, okay? There are many times when I would be having conversations out in Mesa or Salt Lake City, and I know other people are listening. I'm actually more concerned about what they're hearing than the people I'm talking to, especially when I can tell that, you know, our guys, Apologia and some of the other guys up in Utah, man, I just love how they are so evangelistic. They're always out in Provo. They're always out talking to BYU students. They're on the streets. They're talking to Mormons all the time. And evidently there's a guy up there. I think I may have run into him in Mesa once, but there's a guy up there that is just, I don't know how to describe it outside of, he is a time waster. His whole purpose is to get you to talk to him for 3 hours and not talk to anybody else and never accomplish anything in the process. And sometimes you get stuck in a situation like that and you really wonder about the value of this. But so often there are other people. And so I wrote this primarily for the people who are not going to be responding to me. They're just going to be listening and thinking and going, yeah, there are wild-eyed leftist heretics everywhere in the Roman Catholic Church, and the Dicastery for the Faith will do nothing about them because the Dicastery of the Faith is filled with them. But Vigano, a believing Catholic, points these things out. Boom! And again, you know it's true. Every Catholic watching this knows it's true. If you know anything about history, if it was 400 years ago, he would be dead. If it was 300 years ago, he'd be dead. If he was in a Catholic country, he'd either disappear or he would be burned at the stake. That's what happened. That's what he did. How'd this happen? And what can you do about it? It makes you go, huh, did we take a wrong turn someplace? Yeah. Yeah. Took a wrong turn long, long time ago. And so there was one person responded when I said, doesn't that bother you? This is a repentant sinner, converted to Christ, Catholic, former adult actress producer, rosary designer, former pro athlete, Miss B converted. is her name, is the thing on it. And her response is simply, no, doesn't bother me. And there are just all these people who will just go, nope, I'm not going to think about it. Nope, doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me. Everything's going to be just fine and dandy. And you go, do you really think that what Rome is teaching is the faith of the church for 2,000 years? Oh, yeah. Okay. So when I point out that 400 years ago, very different beliefs than now, you don't, that doesn't make you stop and go, well, how could that be? And my mind just goes back to what, ironically, Bob Sengenis wrote to me years ago when I criticized John Paul II for contradicting an earlier pope. And he was like, who are you to interpret what the church teaches? Only the church gets to interpret the church. Well, who's the church today? You telling me that Tucho Fernandez gets to interpret these things? That's the voice of the church now? Because I know one thing. I know one thing. Tucho Fernandez does not believe what Roman Catholics believed only 100 years ago, really only 50 years ago. He believes very, very different things. So how is that not a complete denial of there being any kind of real apostolic tradition in the possession of the church? Yes, sir?
Well, the question I would ask here is, does Bob still believe the way he did when he said that? Because when he's on Iron Sharpens Iron, the things he said were, man, talk about pulling no punches.
Oh, he didn't pull any punches,
Does the fact that he's Catholic then give him the right to say those things and you're not, and that's the only difference?
Well, but see, Bob's trying to survive without becoming a sede vacantist, without coming to the conclusion that the papacy has been lost or taken over or destroyed or something along those lines. I don't know why anybody would do that. I give him credit for trying, but you basically heard him say, well, sometimes we have really bad popes and you just have to hold your nose and he'll pass. And I'm like, he's done everything in his power to fundamentally alter the mechanism by which his successor and every successor after him will be chosen. So what if you get three Francises and they keep moving left? What then? See, most of this happens so slowly that we don't live long enough to end up seeing all of it. We can see it in the past. And so that's why I'm saying, look back 100 years. Do you see what's changed? And they're saying, we don't need to look back. We can just look right now. It's like, then you'll never know. You'll never know. And that means is, if you say to me, yes, I have certainty because the church is the church of 2,000 years ago, you just hung yourself. You just ripped away any possibility of that being true. So why should I believe it? So I feel sorry for folks in that situation. I really do. I pray the Lord will give direction and open hearts and minds. I think there are a lot of people who have been red-pilled by Francis, and I just don't want to see the same things happen there that's happened within Mormonism, where people start realizing something's all wrong here, and they just end up as the religiously abused. They leave. They don't believe in anything anymore. They're burned out. You know, the same thing happened with the JWs after the failed prophecy in the 70s. Over 1 million people left. They didn't end up going anywhere else. They just became the religiously abused. And we have a large missionary opportunity there, evangelism opportunity right there in front of us. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for this week. I believe, unless I am mistaken, that when are we? Tuesday? So on Tuesday, I don't know how this works. I don't know how it's going to work. I'm going to sit here and Rich is going to give me the names and we'll go from there. But we're going to do the drawing, but we're going to do it electronically. We're not printing out little pieces of paper. We're not going to bring Summer in to, you know, pull out a little piece of paper and hand it to me. Yes.
No, the list has been put in order. We haven't, you know, done a drawing yet. We haven't done the randomizer portion of it. But the list has been organized. Everything, every ticket that was purchased has been put and designated in the order that they were brought in. Everything's nailed down, cross-checked. That's all already done. So the only thing left to do is to actually run the randomizer on Tuesday. We'll do them separately, the first for the cross and then for the Bible. And we'll know then who the winners are.
Here's the question. What if we find out that someone who bought a ticket doesn't believe that God knows who's going to win? So if you have an open theist that buys a ticket, they don't believe that right now God knows who's going to win, because God doesn't know what the result of the randomizer is going to be, because the future doesn't exist yet.
I'll let you deal with that. All I know is we're going to push a button, a number is going to come out, and that number is going to tell us who the winner is. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You don't want me getting theology involved with computer stuff? Don't want that? No. That's what's scary about AI as well. So there you go. So we'll do on Tuesday the 9th, we will do that. And so next week should be fairly straightforward for the 10th and the 11th, regular programs on Tuesday, Thursday. And then the 12th is when Rich and I get really busy. Because I pull out for the trip, and we have two of the three debates pretty much nailed down for the Colorado trip. Colorado trip's just under a month. It's going to be way too short as far as I'm concerned. Really looking forward to it. Love Colorado. And I'll just tell you, for those of you, the three or four of you that have prayed for me, from the day after that last surgery where it was successful and we got things taken care of, the day after that, I've been on bike. And I'm not back. I'm still so heavy in comparison to what I once was. Terrible. I'm not fully back. But in June, I spent 45 hours on bike and rode 707 miles. With a lot of climbing. So I'm really happy about that. I'm excited about that. And so I'm looking forward to riding some places in Colorado that I haven't ridden before, and then other places, getting to see places I didn't ever think I'd see again, because honestly, I was starting to give up that I'd ever get to do any of this stuff again. And I realize all that could come to an end tomorrow. I'm living with that. I live with that reality. Things could go south tomorrow. I'm just enjoying it while I've got it. Just thankful that the Lord's given me this season to be able to do that thing, because I'll be honest with you, when I've got goals like that and I'm working hard, I'm much more energetic in studying. I was today, while I was riding indoors, I was listening to one of the guys I'm going to be debating. And the book I'm reading isn't 1,000% relevant to our topic, but I want to know where the guy's coming from, you know? And so I've got that focus that I don't have as strongly when I'm not feeling as good as I'm feeling right now. And so I'm really thankful for that. So two of the three, pretty much in the bag. One's going to be public in the sense of you can come Colorado Springs. You can come, I'm sorry, in Denver. You can come and listen to the debate. It'll be on Open Theism. Does God exhaustively know the future? And yes, we did do a debate 10 years. Can you believe it was 10 years ago in Denver with Bob Enyart on the same subject? This will be a little bit different than that one. And then right at the end, we will have a debate with Jared Longshore. Brother Jared Longshore, on who is in the new covenant, according to the book of Hebrews. But that will be done from the RV. That'll be the first formal debate that I've done from the studio in the RV. So that'll be right at the end of the trip. So hopefully we'll have worked out all the kinks and bugs and everything else. And I'll have redundancy available as far as internet connectivity and stuff like that. There hopefully will be a third debate at the beginning, more toward the beginning of the trip. Well, once I get to Colorado Springs. So pray that that happens. The gentleman I would be debating is trying to free up that time, move some things around so he can be there for that. So pray that that works out, because the more the better. The topics are all topics that certainly I'm doing work on, because I want to know where the individual is coming from. I want to try to, I'm not like some people who just simply have a pre-programmed presentation and I'm just going to show up with my slides and the other guy can say what he wants to and I'm just going to do my thing. I want to try to make it more, directly relevant. And hey, three debates. And then I've got a fourth one coming up in October. We'll move us to getting to the big 200. It's just down the road. It's just down the road. Still a lot of work to get there. But and hopefully these will be useful topics, useful for a long term. That's what we're trying to do these years, anyways, with the debates. So that'll be coming up, and I would say by the time I head out, we should have all that stuff worked out as far as addresses, times, are they going to ask you to get tickets so they have enough room and stuff like that? I don't know yet. That's something they keep asking. One of the churches, both of them have asked me, how many people do you expect to show up? And I'm like, got no idea. Didn't know what one of the debates, who it was going to be with. So I don't know is he going to draw his side? I don't know. There's no way of knowing. But one of the ways the churches these days frequently do that to avoid problems is to have an online registration thing where you, that way they can make sure they have enough room and you don't have people angry getting turned away in the back. Like at the debate in Southern California that one night that turned out not to be a debate anyways. Try to avoid that kind of stuff. So we'll let you know more about that, but I'm really excited about it. A lot of work due between now and then, not only preparatory for that, but just simply all the stuff you need to do to head out for a month on the road. So if you pray for us, please pray along those lines. Regular schedule mainly next week. Hope to see you then. Thanks for watching. God bless.